And if you're not fighting for the speech of people you disagree with, you're really not fighting for speech. That's why I don't have to be religious or even have any, you know, overly religious people in my life to say, no, I want every religion to have their right to practice.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I've got actually one of my first repeat guests. I think only my second repeat guest on the show today. I have the one and only Blair White, who was one of my first guests on the show and joins me again today. Blair, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me again. I was saying before this, I consider myself one of the OG guests, and I'm just really proud of you and happy that the podcast is growing.
Yeah, it is. And having you on early, that was one of our highest viewed, most in demand episodes. So you are part of the OG crew and you got the food takes off the ground too. But one of the reasons I always wanted to have you back, you're a great guest, but the reason I wanted to have you back this week was because of what's going on in Washington, D.C. right now. So for people that don't know, House Democrats have passed the Equality Act. And now it is in the Senate up for debate. President Biden supports it. It probably won't ultimately pass the Senate. It would need 60 votes. But this is a big question of debate. And for people who don't know, the Equality Act would add gender identity and sexual orientation to federal civil rights law. But it would do a lot more than that. It's very sweeping and it has no exceptions at all for religious liberty. So, Blair, what's your kind of big picture take on the Equality Act?
Well, you know, I think that in America in particular, and certainly places like Canada and the UK, anything that is cloaked in the term civil rights or LGBT rights, anything in the interest of minorities, it becomes unquestionable, right? It becomes, if you're against it in any possible way, that must mean you're against that group of people. And unfortunately, like you said, the Equality Act is quite sweeping. It doesn't offer any protections for religious liberties, which is, you know, a hallmark of this country. It should include it. You know, it's unfortunate that the pendulum has to swing so far, right? Like that we can't hold two thoughts in our head at once, that the rights of LGBT people are indeed incredibly important. You know, I grew up in an era in the early 2000s where it was very different than how it is now. You know, it very much was religious people oppressing LGBT people. That was the mood of it back then. That's what was happening. And while it still, of course, is happening to an extent, I think what you see a lot of more now is this pendulum going the other way, where you're seeing stories of gay people going to bakers they know won't serve them, of trans people requesting intimate services from people that they know, you know, may have a religious exemption. And it's unfortunate that we can't all just see each other as people. I personally feel like the Fairness for All Act was a better alternative. While it wasn't perfect, it actually did take religious liberties into account, whereas the Equality Act completely does away with them.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I wrote about that for The Examiner, but for listeners who don't know, the Equality Act is something interesting. The Fairness for All Act is an interesting alternative. What it does is it does something very similar to the Equality Act. It adds sexual orientation and gender identity to federal civil rights law, but it has clear exceptions for religious schools, for religious cemeteries, and then it only applies the rules to businesses with 15 employees and up, which is what federal civil rights law currently does. What the Equality Act would do was apply civil rights law to even to individuals. If you are doing nail salon services out of your house as just one person, you are under the Equality Act bound by law. If you're renting out a room in your home, you're bound by civil rights law under the Equality Act. So it's a huge expansion. And I guess for me, the question was always like, it is hard, right? Because they frame the opposition to the Equality Act as you oppose equality. Now, look, right, you're trans, I'm gay. Obviously, we don't oppose equality. It's just kind of nonsense. But I don't support any legislation that seeks to find those religious people that we disagree with, right? You and I pretty much disagree with them. And instead of convincing them, crush them with the law, right? So how do you view the approach of the Equality Act versus your own approach when it comes to people who are still staunch traditionalists and disagree with us?
Man, I see people as people. I see people. I know people think that's such a cliche thing to say, but like, you know, I have definitely encountered religious people who maybe would have questioned me throughout my life, maybe more so before I transitioned, to be honest, when people identified me as like a gay or feminine male. I got a lot more of that. But, you know, I've always just kind of innately understood like, these people are coming at it from their experiences in life, what they know and what they don't know, obviously, about people like us. And I've just always approached it with, you know, empathy. Like I've always almost in a way felt bad when people, you know, exhibited cruelty towards me because of who I was, because I always saw it as, wow, that person's really lacking something, or wow, that person's really uneducated. And again, like you said, the approach now isn't to do that, it's to crush people with the law. And here is the one of the biggest downfalls, in my opinion, is that you never really hear trans activists speaking about, or LGBT activists speaking about, unemployment within the LGBT community, specifically trans community. But it is a really big problem. Instead, they focus on superficial things like pronouns and, you know, superficial things. I'm much more concerned with unemployment. And what this Equality Act does, it actually turns trans people into liabilities. Like, who is going to want to hire someone that all of a sudden you have to be fearful that you might say or think the wrong thing around them, and suddenly they can, you know, shove the law at you? It's very much a double-sided sword. And like many things these activists do, they shoot themselves in the foot. You know, I've never been religious. Religion's never been part of my world. I don't have, you know, an edgy atheist past. I don't have a religious past. I'm literally just a person who religion has really never affected me much, at least for my own personal life. But I've always respected religious freedoms, and I've always kind of understood that certain people need that, you know, like it's very essential, not to use a pun with how everything's happening in the world, but it's very essential to people. It's also why, even though I never have enjoyed church and I don't agree with a lot of things that happen in churches, I also have fought for churches to reopen during COVID, because these are essential things for people, and people really value their religion. And I think we're just in a different time where a lot more religious people get it than people think and give credit for. I think people are very much hung up on the stereotypes from the past when it comes to religious people. And while those people still exist that will dislike you for being gay or trans or bi or whatever, honestly, it's far and few in between these days.
So one thing that I think it matters is, you and I both know how important the First Amendment is and free speech is, yeah. Right? We've both had threats to our free speech in terms of people trying to shut us down, people trying to, I've had people tell me that if they see me in one of DC's gay bars, they'll kick me into the street, right? And so if we want our free speech, if we want our First Amendment, and that's a little different, it's not the government, right? But in general, if you want free speech and the First Amendment, you have to have it for everyone. You can't pick and choose. That's what these activists don't seem to understand.
Right. And if you're not fighting for the speech of people you disagree with, you're really not fighting for speech. That's why I don't have to be religious or even have any, you know, overly religious people in my life to say, no, I want every religion to have their right to practice. Even religions that are still more so in, you know, we talk about Islam sometimes and how sometimes they are a bit behind when it comes to the way Christianity is kind of reformed around LGBT people. I think Islam still definitely has to catch up. I still fight for them to practice what they practice, you know, as long as you're not impeding on me and my life. And again, we go back to like the pendulum swinging. I think a lot of this is retribution for, you know, the way LGBT people have been treated by religious people in the past. And it's just unfortunate that, I guess, people can't go into things with holding two thoughts at once.
Yeah, you can't heal through revenge or through retribution. You have to actually balance out in terms of equality, not in terms of, okay, now's our turn to oppress. And so one other concern I have with the Equality Act, and I'm curious for your thoughts on this, is it actually literally redefines the term sex under federal law to include self-ID. Now, I've always had the understanding of transgender issues and transgender people that your gender identity is distinct from the biological sex you were born as. And that if you have that, if you are like that, then you live as the opposite gender and transition, and that's what's best for you as an adult, and power to you. But obviously the concept of biological sex does exist. I think you and I both acknowledge that. And this law would erase it. It would say sex is totally malleable, subject to self-ID under the law. That's just wrong, isn't it?
Yeah. And, you know, I often say it makes trans people look like the flat earthers of gender. Like, you can't just deny a basic fundamental fact of life, which is that biological sex exists. Like, what they're really asking you to do is to pretend as if in humans there's no biological sex, but in every other species on the planet, it's different. Like, we can observe differences between males and females in every species of animal on the planet, but for some reason we're supposed to suspend that basic idea when it comes to humans. Doesn't make much sense to me. And, you know, I don't think that the concept of transgenderism or transsexuals and biological sex are mutually exclusive. I actually think that they reinforce each other.
Can you explain that? How so?
Yeah, I the only way I can describe, it just seems like common sense to me. I don't know. So I'm sorry for laughing, but the only way I can describe like me being trans is like I was born one way and now I'm a different way. Like, not that I've completely changed my biological sex. You can't do that. But, you know, you change the way you live because you were born one way. So when you take that away, doesn't that kind of take away being trans? But now we're on this new wave of like, you don't need dysphoria to be trans. There's no biological sex. Men and women are exactly the same. It's just the constant gaslighting, which is lies, and the expectation to feed into, believe, and reinforce those lies. Otherwise, you're canceled. You get attacked. You get treated as though you are some sort of oppressor. We're talking about retribution here. It's going to come back. I cannot see everything that is happening right now in terms of LGBT issues not having some sort of retribution in the future when maybe like a much more conservative government is in power here. Like, I can't see it not going bad.
You have to think of the optics to some extent, because when you're pushing things on people that are really to the extreme, it triggers, rightly or wrongly, it just triggers backlash. That's just how the world works. And I think the conversation about biological sex is interesting because for me, as a gay person growing up, I always felt like trapped by biological sex, the reality of it. Like, I'm biologically male and I was only attracted to people that were biologically male. And right. The way that you understand transgenderism and transgender identity does not conflict with that. But the way that they describe sex as not being a thing, well, then what is homosexuality? Like, what? Why can't I just choose to be straight then?
It erases everything. It erases bisexuals, it erases gay people, it erases trans people. And it's all in the name of protecting those groups. It really makes no sense. And it just feels like we're on this train to nowhere. And I'm just kind of waiting for it to crash. It's really the same thing with, you know, trans sports. Like,
right. And that becomes an issue because the Equality Act actually would make it illegal for schools or anybody to separate sports by biological sex. And I've always personally had the view that if trans men or trans male students want to compete in men's sports, that's fine. Because for listeners, a trans man is somebody who was born as a biological female and then transitioned. So there's no disadvantage. There's actually a disadvantage for trans men in men's sports based on science and biology. But in the opposite case, there is obviously biological differences that don't go away if you transition, especially because they're saying you don't even have to transition. So right. To have just unisex sports, it would absolutely mean that in really physical sports like sprinting or weightlifting or strength or basketball or soccer, it would no longer be fair. So if the Equality Act passed, what would that mean for women's sports?
Well, you know, I think it's unfortunate that the LGBT community, well, I won't say the entire community, because within that, there are individuals like you and myself, and there are a lot more people like us than people like to acknowledge. People are just genuinely silent because they don't want to face the backlash that you and I know very well that we get. You know, it's unfortunate, though, that the activists that propel our movement in a certain direction, trajectory, insist on like giving us this reputation of being anti-woman, anti-children, anti-science, and anti-reality. Like, and those are things that a healthy society will always defend. Like, a healthy society does not look at, you know, women and girls being obliterated in sports and not have an urge to protect them. Like, they're going to protect them. A healthy society doesn't look at, you know, people saying that 12-year-olds can undergo hormone therapy and live as a different gender and all that, and not have a natural innate urge to protect them. Those are things that the community will never overcome. You're never going to get past society's need to protect women and children. You're just not. And I don't believe, you know, that trans people or LGBT people are inherently a threat to women or children, but we're definitely getting that reputation considering we are just, we will not even budge on things like trans sports, even when the science is on, you know, the side of people saying, wait, so you're telling me this like 6'5" biologically male student can totally play basketball with like this 4'11", you know, high school girl? Like, what are you talking about? It's really just, it's upfront. You can just see it. And I think that there has to be some push and pull here, and the community has to give a little bit. Like, we can't just dig our heels in and be so, you know, black and white about these issues.
Yeah.
And I feel like people say, you know, like if a trans person transitions, even though I don't personally agree necessarily with, you know, trans people transitioning before puberty or during puberty, there are some cases where it ends up okay, but it's just impossible to know. It's like a dice roll. But if someone does transition in the middle of puberty or before puberty, like likely they won't have any noticeable advantage. But the problem is, many of them have not transitioned, don't have intentions of transitioning. And then you go to adult sports and many of the trans women in those sports are not on hormones or don't transition. So it's an issue.
Or if they transition after puberty, my understanding is there's some advantages that don't go away.
Absolutely. You know, you think of things like wrist size, height, bone density, just everything, you know, that testosterone living in your body for the first, you know, 25 years or whatever of your life, like it's, right. It changed you. Like yes. You have a larger exoskeleton, you just are more athletic. That's just how it is.
So
and obviously there's exceptions, but you know.
I have a little bit of mixed feelings about this because on one hand, I completely agree. I think it's fair to have, you know, these rules about biological sex in sports. On the other hand, I do think that, well, yeah, I mean, just for that example, when I played high school soccer, varsity, right? And we were not very good, the boys team. We lost more games than we won. The girls team was excellent. They won most of their games. And when we scrimmaged them, we'd beat them 4-0. It's like we were just fast. They were more skilled, but we were faster and stronger. Like that's just that's just reality. So in one sense, I totally agree with this argument. I do feel, though, like conservatives can be really hyperbolic about it sometimes. Like,
yes.
They'll be like, Equality Act would be the end of women's sports. And I don't think there are some. We've seen some, like in Connecticut. I don't think there's lines of trans people at every high school waiting to go in other people's sports and win. It
right.
would happen, and it would be unfair. But I feel like we overstate it and can be alarmist about it sometimes. What do you think?
It does often get to that level. It does get overstated. You know, I saw some conservative on Twitter today. I forget her name. Her name was like Liz something, but she was getting it. Not Liz Cheney. She was getting attention on Twitter for saying that like trans people are demonic and there's no way else to look at it. And we have to approach that with legislation. And I'm like, y'all are crazy. So there is, you know, again, I always try to say these issues are not black and white. These issues have a lot of nuance and, you know, every sports team, women's sports team is not full of trans people trying to get in. And, you know, every bathroom is not full of Jessica and Eve trying to get in. In fact, that's even more rare. But it is completely fair to say that it is harming, you know, women and girls. Like, you know, there are videos of, you know, teenage girls speaking out. And I personally know some people that have their kids or they did before the pandemic in public school. And, you know, because of who I am online and what I'm known for speaking out about, they'll come to me and be like, so they just put 3 trans people on my kid's team. And it's a problem, but no one's admitting it. Like, am I wrong for this? And, you know, it's just about trying to legislate in a way that is okay for everyone, which is like honestly impossible in the era we're in, but I hope we sometime get to it.
Yeah. And that brings up, you mentioned safety there for 1 minute. I do always take issue with what conservatives say about trans people and safety. They're like, we need to protect women's locker rooms and women's bathrooms from biological men going in them. That would endanger the women. That's just wrong for a few reasons. One is that, like, if you're a rapist or a criminal or a predator, you're not going to be like, oh, well, the law says I can't go in that bathroom.
Right.
So I guess like changing the law isn't going to affect criminals. And then the flip side of that coin is people like you, it would be unsafe for you to go into a men's locker room in some places, right? Like that makes no sense. So I feel like this black and white narrative when it comes to the safety stuff doesn't make any sense.
Absolutely. And just statistically, you know, even throwing out like all the Jessica and Eves or people that maybe like assume a trans identity for whatever reason, looking at actual trans people, statistically, we are just not perpetrators of violent crime like that. Like it's just not a thing. If anything, it's the opposite, that we are statistically often victims of those crimes. And so again, I completely agree with that. Like treating all these situations like there's going to be predators in the bathroom, it's just not a thing. If you're willing to break the law to rape someone, you're really not going to care about like what, is it even a misdemeanor right. to go to like an opposite gender bathroom? Like, is it even like a law you're breaking? Like, no one cares about that. And bathrooms are not hot spots for rape. But I think it goes back to something that we talked about a little bit in your last podcast that I was a guest on, that like a lot of conservatives just have never met a trans person. Like they just, their only concept of it is, you know, online and the clickbait and the crazy activists. Like they just have never met anyone, you know, like you think of gay people, like everyone knows gay people in their life. Everyone has, you know, the gay uncle or the gay cousin or their gay friend, everyone, lesbians too. But no one really knows trans people, especially in the middle of the country. So I think it's just a matter of like, trans people need to do a better job of providing like positive examples and speaking out against the bad apples, which is what I try to do. And speaking out against the activists that really take us into a certain, onto a certain trajectory that is, you know, self-damaging. Like we just need to speak out about more often. Like I know there's a lot more in the gay scene, a lot more gay people that are coming out as, they don't even have to be conservatives, but just coming out as like against the woke agenda, against, you know, hardcore leftivism and progressivism. And I think that's been really positive for gay people. I've seen attitudes change because of that within the conservative movement. Like you think of CPAC, they have Scott Pressler and they're awarding him. And you think of just other, there's so many gay people within the movement that are like icons at this point.
Yeah. Rick Grinnell is beloved by the Republican MAGA base.
Absolutely. And that doesn't come without, you know, just being a positive example. And I just feel like there's not as many in the trans community, partly because the community's like a tenth of the size of the gay community, but also because these issues get so hyper politicized that we're often very scared to speak out.
Yeah. Well, and what's interesting is actually I saw the polling of who voted for Trump, and actually trans people, more trans people voted for Trump than lesbian people did. Gay people were, it was only barely, I think, gay people and trans people voted for Trump about that. And I didn't vote for Trump. I voted third party. But you get the point, right? It's like, yeah, in terms of not being liberal, it's not as if trans people are different from the rest of the LGBT community, but I feel like there's way more backlash. There is backlash for gay people who don't go with the tide, but there's even more for trans people. And I mean, there's a couple people, including yourself, but there's very few. And that's probably part of why the trans activists, not everyday trans people, but the activists, they're the most vicious ones in terms of attacking other trans people who speak out, or even other gay people or an LGBT who don't bow to their narrative. I'm thinking of like Charlotte Clymer on Twitter. Charlotte is one of the meanest bullies on the internet.
Nasty. And I think people in my community see like the backlash I get, and they don't want even a portion of it, right? Like I think I've become sort of this example of what happens when you are trans and like step outside of that narrative, because there really is not many other people that have. And I think people see that and they're like, I don't want any of that. So what you said about trans people, more trans people than lesbians voting for Trump, I actually didn't know that, but that makes all the sense in the world to me, because if you think about it, trans people, this is going to sound crazy, trans people are kind of like naturally conservative, because they, at least like binary trans people like me that are like born male, live as a woman, like that's a very, you know, that's the traditional way of seeing gender. It's like men and women. We don't believe in the 76 genders and the 300 genders and the this and that. Like we're going from one to the other. So already we, by and large, believe in the gender binary. And second of all, a lot of us, it takes like so much personal responsibility and like manifestation of your destiny and hard work to transition, that it's like, I couldn't transition and then be like a socialist. Like I had to like work hard, engage in capitalism. I had to take my life into my own hands, you know, and exercise my own liberties. Those are more so conservative values. And by and large, trans people, this is another reason they don't speak out, is they want to be left alone. Like they transition to be left alone, to blend in with society, to not necessarily be like the trans person standing out in the way that a lot of us are. And even myself, because I'm a public figure, like they just want to be like an average girl in a crowd or an average guy in a crowd. So it doesn't surprise me. And most trans people I know, they're like, I believe everything you say, or like, I'm secretly, you know, Republican or whatever. It is what it is. People don't believe it. And I say it and people like roll their eyes, but it's so true.
I get a lot of that too from gay people and from, to a lesser extent, lesbian and trans people who will DM me and send me long Instagram messages or I saw you on TV. I can't believe there's somebody like me who says this. Thanks for speaking out. I would, but I'm afraid my friends would all reject me. And it's like, it's just sad, honestly, like that people truly are intolerant. And it's not only, I think, like liberal, woke, gay people and LGBT people. That it's just a common problem in our society.
Yeah.
In terms of not viewing people who disagree with you politically as like, I can't be friends with them or demonizing them. And it's sad because it's like, I play in sports leagues and I'm now only in all straight sports leagues because I tried to play in a gay soccer league and was kicked out of it for being transphobic.
The drama.
Well, because I wrote, of course, they ignore all the articles I've written over the years, like pro-trans in terms of anti-military ban, other stuff like fairness for all. And they just looked at the one that I wrote about child transitioning, where I was like, irreversible medical changes for underage people. Not the best idea, in my opinion. They were like, oh, well, you can't, your presence on this team endangers. They didn't even have any trans members. They said it endangers prospective future trans people who might join the team, endangers their safety for me to be involved.
See?
So now it's like the only place where I was accepted was an all straight men's team.
Right. And there is this up and coming trans influencer right now that I am friends with. His name's like The Offensive, and it's like the T slur. I don't know if I can say that on your podcast, but it's like the T slur with the Y at the end. And he said something recently. He said, if trans people can handle dysphoria, they can handle anything. Stop coddling us. And it's so true. It's like this idea that like words are violent or like that we can't handle basic truths about life or that we can't handle disagreement is so, it's not representative of like me and the strength I have or any trans people I know in real life. And also that all or nothing attitude, like you said, the fact that you have been so supportive of trans people, that you like, you know, interviewed me and you've written for, you know, it's an all or nothing attitude. It's like, if you're not 110% on board with their agenda, which is ever changing, by the way, there'll be a new rule next week. The rules will be thrown out. That you're suddenly not allowed to participate in society. That's the biggest thing. It's like, where does this stop? You know, it's like, to me, the biggest threat beyond anything. Like, we can talk about like trans sports and pronouns, and we can talk about like even, you know, climate change, whatever. The biggest threat to society and the way it is right now, in my opinion, is cancel culture. And not just petty, like, oh, someone's getting mean tweets. No, like this idea that we throw people and cast them out of society for speaking on things that 5 years ago they would have been able to say. This idea that average people are so terrified to say what they feel, that's a very sick, toxic environment. No one should ever be afraid to say and state their real opinions on things. But now we're in such an environment where you just can't. Like, I have made a living from speaking my mind, and so I have that freedom to come on here and say whatever I want to say to you or any other medium I have. But so many people are just like trying to get by in life. Like, so many people are just working in like an average 9-to-5 job or even bigger than that, like a corporate job. And it's like, you lose everything if you go against the narrative, which is ever changing, like we said. And it's just a sad state of affairs. I don't like seeing people live on their knees like that. Everyone is living on their knees.
Right. And part of the problem is too, that like, there's no grace, there's no forgiveness. Yeah. So for example, if somebody as a teenager said faggot a bunch of times and there's texts of it, right? And they become a journalist or something and that's unearthed. Well, then nowadays in our culture, they're fired. There's no opportunity for them to actually apologize. Be like, I was a teenager. We all said dumb stuff. Hell, I said that all the time when I was a teenager and I was struggling with all my stuff on the inside. And it's like they could apologize and grow from it and move on in a healthy society. But here it's like, if you in your past, we can find writings or comments or recordings of anything you ever said that by 2021 standards is not morally acceptable. Well, because you made that indiscretion in your youth, now you're just ruined. You're like, you're done for life. Like, you can't be in this prominent role or anything that requires the approval of Twitter mobs. And I find that trend really disturbing because in my mind, it almost encourages people to not evolve to not become more accepting, to not regret their past statements. It's like, if you're damned if you do, damned if you don't, you might as well not change.
Absolutely. And it goes back to, this seems to be a common theme in everything we're talking about here. It goes back to not seeing people as people. Like, people make mistakes. People say crazy things. Sometimes they're not even crazy and they get canceled for it. Like, sometimes it's like the most basic thing. And the fact that we're constantly being gaslit, like, have you been seeing people say, there's no such thing as cancel culture? They say that now. They say, oh, there's no such thing.
And just then, like, some of them end up getting canceled.
Right. Just like Antifa is just an idea and sex isn't real. It's like, it's just this constant back gaslighting of lies. And it's so destructive to just the American way of life and people in general, because it's contradictory to human nature. Human nature is to fuck up. Human nature is to grow. Like, we don't all come out perfect as babies, like, with this rule book. And there shouldn't even be a rule book. Like, how and why is there a rule book? Like, yeah, there's basic boundaries you don't cross within society, but we're, like, shrinking those boundaries so far in that we're all just these walking, talking propaganda heads, and we're all just these, like, terrified, like, neutered people. Like, everyone's neutered.
Right, and because they're afraid, and they're afraid because the activists aren't just doing social backlash anymore. They're, like, bullying the corporations and the government to some extent, maybe in the future of the government, into enforcing their will. So, like, I'm willing to brave a Twitter mob. Like, if they want to get all mad at me and flood my mentions, that's okay. But there's another thing where, like, they get Amazon to delete your book. For example, let me ask you about this, because there's a guy named Ryan T. Anderson who is very much a traditionalist. I think he recently worked at the Heritage Foundation, and now he's at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. And he wrote a book that was very critical of, I actually haven't read the book, so I don't have any comment on, like, is it a good book? Is he wrong? Is he right? But it's very traditionalist on trans issues and gender issues, refuting, you know, probably a lot of the things that you and I believe, because we're not on the radical left, but we're not on the traditionalist right on these issues either. But anyway, from all accounts, he's a nice guy. It's a respectful, argument-based book with controversial ideas. Amazon just silently, in the middle of the night, because activists were lobbying them, deleted it. They did this to another person's book, Abigail Schreier, I think her name is. And yeah. Isn't this disturbing that, like, even if you and I were to read these books and disagree with half of what's in it, they should be allowed to have a book for sale. We should exchange the ideas and debate them.
Book burners are never on the right side of history. Never in history have people who wanted books to be destroyed, ideas to be erased, been on the right side of history. And if people don't understand that, that's probably because they never paid attention to history class. Like, I don't know what to tell you. But as a general rule, if something is, you know, if there's a big push to ban a certain thing, like, I actually want to check it out more. Like, I have heard of Abigail's book and the other one you discussed, and I want to look at them more because of that. Like, the idea that an idea simply shouldn't be heard is way more toxic than the idea itself being bad, right? Like, the damage that it does to a society that we're erasing things and burning books, that's so much more worse than any damage that book could have done by just being allowed to be read and consumed and digested in the way that it was meant to be. And again, it's like, who said we can't handle it? And a big problem is corporations as well and businesses who give in to cancel culture, because that really just perpetuates it. And a lot of them are very weak. I've seen people, I've seen corporations and businesses and brands, like, drop people because they've gotten, like, a couple mean tweets. Like, here's the thing that what I've learned, because as an influencer and someone who makes money working with brands often on YouTube and Instagram, whatever, I have seen the way in which a lot of these brands operate and the type of people that work in them. And a lot of them don't really know how social media works. They don't really know how the internet works. And they're just, like, very, it's hard to explain, like, black and white in terms of business. Like, if it's making money, it's good. If it's not, it's bad. And they will view two or three tweets as cause to drop people, not knowing that those two or three people, first of all, it's two or three people. And second of all, they're already in a group chat, like telling each other to go write it. And it's like, they're half the problem. It's like people make mistakes. Yeah. And they can get backlash. Yeah. But these brands that just instantly cave, it's like, you're not going to lose sales because someone that you associate with had a mistake that they had to own up to. Like, it's just not going to happen. You know, if Chick-fil-A is still thriving with all of the like backlash they've gotten, like, and the hate that they get, like, then you don't have to drop everyone because someone you work with had a mistake 10 years ago or even last week, even last week.
Yeah, I agree. And I think they just have to have some guts and not be so risk averse, because it's going to cause the opposite. Like, I'm not buying things from companies that just are chicken shit and won't even stand by someone. So, for example, I'm considering, and the only reason I haven't done it yet is because I can only watch certain soccer matches through ESPN Plus, but I'm considering canceling Disney Plus because they fired Gina Carano for no reason. Yeah. It's like, I'm not a huge boycott person, but at a certain level, if this keeps going, these brands are going to get backlash from non-woke America for just constantly caving to these crazy mobs.
Yeah. It's already too much. Like, what we're living in right now isn't sustainable. Like, the atmosphere, the cancel culture, and it's, I don't know what people expect. Like, it's only gonna get worse. This train doesn't just stop. And throughout history, it's like people say cancel culture like it's this new thing. Like, no, not really. I mean, it's like we've called it different things in the past. Like, you have governments that have disappeared people, like Cuba and, you know, people. It's like that's where it eventually goes to. And I have a hard time wrapping my head around people who don't understand that like it really is a trend that only goes in one direction. And at some point, if we don't all as a whole try to stop it, we're going to be in a really, really, really ugly place. We already are, but it's going to get way worse. I do think it's the biggest threat to freedom and America right now.
So that's a good place to wrap up kind of the serious talk. I am curious, because now you're on your second hot food take that everyone who comes on the show has to share. So remind me, do you remember what your first one was? I'm blanking.
It was that I really enjoyed eating Top Ramen just out of the packet, like without cooking it and no seasoning, just the noodles, I think.
That's still gross. But okay, hit us with your second hot food take, Blair.
I think strawberry ice cream and anything that is not just a strawberry by itself, like strawberry flavored anything, is disgusting. Like, I hate pie. I hate pie as well. Maybe that's my take. I hate pie.
Pie is amazing. It's my favorite part of Thanksgiving. Boston cream pie, cherry pie, strawberry rhubarb pie, apple pie with ice cream. Oh, I've probably never disagreed with a food take in 30-something episodes of this podcast more than that, Blair.
Pie is disgusting. Every time I eat it, I want to throw up. I will take a cake over a pie any day. I don't know what it is. I hate it. Ugh.
That's just the worst take, but hey, that's the point of this part of the show. So also for everybody, if you like this conversation, make sure you're following Blair on YouTube. That's your huge channel over there. That's the main thing. It's Blair White. She also has a second channel, Blair Black. Links to both of those will be in the description. And then you can follow Blair on Instagram and also check out her podcast, The Blair White Project. Blair, do you want to tell people a little bit about your podcast and where they can check it out?
Yeah, so I just launched a podcast, The Blair White Project, a little spin on The Blair Witch Project, a movie I've never seen, by the way. Everyone asked me about it because my name's Blair. I've never seen that movie. And honestly, it was just out of an attempt for me to have more open and honest discussions and about topics that YouTube might not find so friendly, because YouTube is quite restrictive, and just feel like more like long form content. You know, I think the way the YouTube algorithm works, it's you definitely tailor things to like 10 or 15 minutes. And to me, it just wasn't fulfilling enough. So I like doing like long form discussions. I've interviewed my best friend, JC Mondowicz from Big Brother. He escaped communism. I've interviewed Lauren Chen so far. I'd love to have you on at some point. And yeah, just like long form, Blair, instead of just the 10-minute YouTube videos.
Yeah. Well, because this video will definitely get demonetized when I post it to YouTube.
You think? Sure.
Yeah, no. Absolutely. It has Blair White in the headline, okay? All right. So that is it for this week, guys. Make sure you go ahead and like and leave a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Subscribe on Spotify. If you're watching us on YouTube, click the subscribe button, leave us a like. And Blair, thanks so much for coming on, and we'll catch up again sometime soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
You are listening to Breaking Boundaries with Brad Palumbo.